Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the consequences of change and how today's choices impact tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent, and Chris Kington Barker is hosting the program virtually today while still practicing recommendations for safe physical distancing. Her guests will be joining today's show by Zoom and phone. We encourage you to participate by sending us your questions or comments by email to voices@kcbx.org, or you can call them into us at 805-549-8855. With that, I'll turn it over to you, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Sarah. As the number of cases of COVID-19 increases, so does the associated anxiety. For the general public, the mental health effects of the pandemic are as essential to address as the physical health effects. And for one in five who already have mental health conditions, or the one in two who are at risk of developing them, we need to take personal and perhaps professional measures to address them. A Kaiser Family Foundation poll conducted in July of 2020 found more than half of U.S. adults reported their mental health has been negatively impacted due to worry and stress over the coronavirus, an increase of 20% when the same question was asked in March of this year. As the pandemic continues, what can we do to protect our mental and physical well-being and that of our families? My guest today for this show will help answer that question. I'm joined by Dr. Murat Akalin, psychiatrist in San Luis Obispo County, who sees adolescents and adults for a full range of psychiatric problems, and Dr. Ramona Friedman, clinical psychologist who works with children and adults, although primarily sees young people in private practice in San Luis Obispo. She specializes in treatments for anxiety and related challenges. And thank you both for joining me today. This has been a huge topic that I think has been bubbling up more and more, so I appreciate it. And to get going, I'm going to, as Dr. Akalin pointed out, start with really easy questions. And so the first one is, you know, what effect are some of the efforts that are going on right now to control the pandemic having on just a general mental health for some of the communities that you're seeing?
Wow. Well, Chris, first of all, thank you for having us and giving us the opportunity to talk on this so important topic. It's actually been getting a fair amount of press, which is good. Yeah. I'm happy to add my thoughts to the discussion. Where to start on that? Well, I guess one answer to that could be a question. In what ways has it not impacted mental health? Yeah. This is universally shared mental health challenge that has ever happened in our lifetimes. Mm-hmm. And we're all affected. Physicians and psychologists are affected in this together with our patients. I guess I could talk about all of the ways in which mental health has been affected negatively, but I do think I'd like to talk a little bit about the way things have been affected positively as well. This is an incredible stimulus for change, and change can happen in all different directions. But I think the biggest thing is the decreased social contact, and that kind of is the one of the main hubs for how this has affected mental health.
The isolation. Our brain,
the isolation, it could be isolation, but it could also just be absence of one-on-one contact or one-on-group contact. But our brains depend on that to be healthy. Mm-hmm. We get ill, mentally ill, when we don't have that, or we certainly are driven in that direction. And I think that's the biggest thing. The other thing, of course, is to worry about our own health and the health of others and the chronic uncertainty that's been continuing on. And we don't know how long it's going to continue, which is itself an uncertainty.
Right. Talk a little bit about, how that uncertainty is, because planning, being able to have things in an organized, predictable, planned for, I mean, we tend to be a society that in many ways seems as though we're taught that we should be able to plan for our future and kind of construct our lives around a certain way of living. And this is really out of control in terms of personal control.
Yeah, I'll take that one, Chris. I talk about uncertainty probably all day long in my practice, specializing in the treatment of anxiety disorders. And, anxious people in general have a really hard time with uncertainty. But I would say, generally speaking, humans have a really hard time with uncertainty. There's a certain level of, things that you can count on and people that you're going to see and a reliable job, reliable housing, reliable, schooling that are not, happening right now in a lot of people's lives, that is causing a tremendous amount of anxiety and other, stressful factors. So uncertainty has been very, very challenging. And what's unique about this uncertainty is that it's prolonged uncertainty. So people have kind of a coping way to kind of cope with maybe short bits of uncertainty, but this is definitely unique. We've never experienced anything like this prolonged uncertainty. So the impact of that has been tremendous.
Is that something that that has the same effect on children that it does in adolescents as it does on adults?
It sure does. Across development, uncertainty has a really big impact. And I see that in my practice with kids, teenagers, their parents, and grownups.
Talk, if you will, Dr. Friedman, can you speak to, we're getting ready to go back into school, or I think a lot of students have gone back into school, but not in the ways that they have wanted to go back into school. So they're having to do it, at least in these communities right now, virtually, because of the color level that we're at, which is, I think, purple right now. What is it for children and for adolescents that that impact is? Is that a positive impact? Is that a negative impact?
The impact of the differences right now, a lot of people look at these changes as really stressful, as stressful situations. School's not going to be the same. Talking to, your friends, playing with your friends, they're not the same. We have to make these creative adjustments to continue being social and to continue learning and continuing doing all the things that are good for us to do. So I think right now it's especially important, I use this word a lot in my practice, in my daily life, is to use our creativity and to use our creativity to, although these things are different, but how can we make them, interesting and fun despite the challenges and the barriers? So a lot of people kind of overhope that school's going to be the same. They kind of want things to be the same because that's what they can count on and that's what brought them joy and stability before, but they're not the same. So if we keep on hoping that they're going to be the same, it creates more stress and more struggle.
Yeah.
So it's time to kind of make some changes, but changes that are creative and still meet those needs.
Dr. Auckland, you had alluded to there are some positive impacts of some of these changes and some negative ones. And one of the things that I heard from a parent about school was that for parents who have children that are stressed out about being in a classroom environment, and it may be that there are some behavioral issues that have come up for them in that environment, or that school itself, being in that environment itself, is a stressor. Having been at home and doing schooling at home on Zoom has actually been a relief for them and the family. And that she was wondering, is that unusual? Is that, you know, because she was looking at it as that's not something that's really being discussed. As for some people, some of this really has had a positive impact in some ways. Not to say that the pandemic is a good thing, but can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, I think it certainly could have a positive impact in that way. But I think also to think about it could be experienced as positive because it's a relief to that child. You know, I have a patient who, you know, hasn't had an anxiety disorder, and he's been kind of agoraphobic and generally staying home more often than not for years and years and years. And he said to me when I checked in with him a couple months ago, he said, "I'm doing fine, Doc. I'm doing better than ever. I've been training for this for 20 years." So he felt all of a sudden kind of normal.
Yeah.
And yet I think we can ask ourselves, is that really good for our mental health in the long run? A bit of relief is fine. But to kind of go back to what Dr. Friedman was saying, this presents us with an incredible challenge and an opportunity to be creative. And I kind of like to think as the hallmark, one of the hallmarks of mental health is psychological flexibility.
Flexibility kept coming into my mind. When you were talking about creative, I was thinking that very word, yeah.
Yeah, and so this is what the situation calls for. And the people who have that more naturally, and they have more of that as part of their natural disposition and skill set, are doing okay. And the people who don't, who are stuck on, "I just want it to be the way it was before, when are we going to get back to normal?" they can have a harder problem. But I think the key thing is yeah, we all of us have different amounts of kind of native flexibility, but it is something that can be developed.
Mm-hmm. I want to add to that too. Yeah. We talked about this where, you know, there are kids and parents that are relieved because it's easier right now and they get to maybe avoid the stressful factors that come along with, you know, day to day.
Right.
But not practicing those uncomfortable things that come into our lives, right, you know, day to day, will have likely a lasting impact on their, a negative lasting impact on their mental health post-COVID. So when we get back to normal, you know, these kids aren't practicing the uncomfortable situations that come along with going to school every day, even though it might be better for them right now.
Yeah, yeah. I want to get back to that in just a moment. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you on Central Coast Voices, your KCBX Central Coast listener supported radio station. Dr. Murat Akalin, psychiatrist in San Luis Obispo County who sees adolescents and adults for a full range of psychiatric problems, and Dr. Ramona Friedman, clinical psychologist who works with children and adults, primarily sees young people in private practice in San Luis Obispo and specializes in treatments for anxiety and related challenges, have joined me today for a discussion about the impact of COVID-19 on our mental health. If you'd like to bring your questions or comments to today's discussion, you can email us at voices@kcbx.org or call your questions in to 805-549-8855. When you're talking about flexibility and the fact that some people are more flexible than others, you also made a comment that we can learn to be, even for those of us that are not as flexible inherently. It doesn't come as naturally. It's not part of what we do as a coping strategy or a way of adapting to our lives. What are some of what you can give people in terms of how to kind of work that muscle so that they can become more flexible? How does one adapt to that?
Well, this is what I do all day long. So increasing everybody's flexibility, kids, teenagers, adults, parents, we need to practice what makes us feel uncomfortable, and what makes us feel uncomfortable kind of a little bit each day. So if talking to friends during this time, you know, I have a lot of kids that say, I don't know what to say on a Zoom call. I know what to say in person, but I don't know what to say. So we can practice kind of talking about different aspects of life on a Zoom call. So doing things that are uncomfortable increases our flexibility in all areas of life.
So doing those things that makes us feel uncomfortable, for instance, if it's uncomfortable to go to a situation, to maybe go to that situation for a small period of time and practice it, and then maybe go to it again and practice it. But to be active in it, not to sit back and wait for it to get better.
Correct. Yeah. Just because it doesn't get better doesn't mean it can't also be wonderful, fulfilling, and fantastic. So a lot of people shy away from their uncomfortable feelings. And just because they feel uncomfortable sometimes means they had not a good time. And that is not true. So we are capable of actually feeling uncomfortable and having a good time.
Yeah.
And just to add to that, it might be something that is uncomfortable, not because we even know it's going to be uncomfortable, like a Zoom call, like somebody's experienced that it's been uncomfortable, but it might be something we've never tried before. And I think globally, I would say just trying something new. In general, trying anything new that you don't have, you may not have any idea if it's going to be uncomfortable or not, but trying something new is inherently uncomfortable because we don't know what it's going to be like. So I think that is another tip for people to practice during this time. Try doing something new. We're so stuck. We feel so stuck, but we're not as stuck as we think.
Do you see that the people that kind of remain in that rut are the people that keep waiting for things go back to the way they were so that they can do the same things that they used to do? Or they keep trying to do the things that they used to do and getting shut down as opposed to finding new actions or new ways?
I think so, Chris. I think that, you know, the people that are kind of waiting around or hoping things will be the same or just waiting for their opportunity to do the same things are experiencing more of that, for sure. I've seen a lot of COVID kind of popular things to do, you know, on social media, like bake bread or garden. These things have, you know, sprout up naturally because they are COVID friendly. And even though you might not have a green thumb, I don't certainly, you know, trying it out can be fun.
Dr. Ocklin, what are some of the, you know, because I want to go to the positive too, but also talking about helping people see what's not working. What are some of the more destructive ways that you see people responding that is ineffective in coping with the impact?
So one common, really, really common one is staying glued to the news. It's our brain's natural attempt to want to have more certainty and know more, and this constant wanting to know more about something that really is unknowable.
Yeah,
everything on the news is about what's going to happen, which is never knowable. It's just we're trying to predict it. So what to do about that? A very, very practical way is to really limit our exposure to the news. I mean, you can watch CNN or Fox News or whatever you watch all day long, and it is going all day long. And I think you can say, I can probably stay informed and stay up to date if I just limit it to 15 minutes twice a day, 30 minutes twice a day. yeah, there's so much amplification of fear that happens that way.
Yeah.
And it's avoidance. It we're kind of doing that, and we're avoiding just the sense of where things are not certain, and we're just dwelling on that rather than being able to do anything else. I think another thing, the way that people are coping, and this is partly a coping, but partly just a product of the lack of the disruption in structure, is sleeping. Sleeping in late, staying up late, more time on the internet, more time watching Netflix, are also things that are not really helping us stay healthy during this time. We need routine and structure more than ever. More than ever.
So if people, so you're talking about developing a routine. If the only routine that people had was going to work, and their social structure, their friend structure was work-based, which for a lot of people it is, right? They spend most of their awake time in their work environment, and that's where their social networking is. They need to create something different. What are ways to do that?
I think developing, you know, any type of activity, I think, you know, another thing that I want to add in that scheduling difficulty is that I make suggestions in exercise and getting outside. And a lot of people have fear of just going outside. But right now it's harder than ever because there's ash on our cars and the air quality is poor, which adds a whole nother layer to our health behaviors that are hard to maintain. But I agree with Dr. Auckland. I think, you know, cutting down the news and increasing self-care behavior, like social connection, exercise, you know, creativity, anything else that we can add into your life, but some sort of, you know, rhythm to the day.
It seems that a really natural response to the unknowable for a lot of people is fear, right? And at least it seems that way. And for a lot of people, when they're fearful, that it comes out angry.
Yes.
Can you speak a little bit to what you see happening around that?
Well, I actually see a lot of people making certainty out of inherently uncertain things because it is hard to live in that uncertainty. So I think our kind of human brains tries to make certainty. And what happens when we do that is that we actually create more anxiety and more stress. And that turns into more fear because we can't seem, it's just out of our control. And not everybody, but there are some people where, you know, anxiety and depression kind of shifts into anger. And that can be misperceived by family members and the people around you and can be judged, you know, by, you know, more family discord. Relationships, quality of relationships go down because people have a really hard time saying the very vulnerable thing, which is, I am scared and I am anxious. This is generally kind of a hard thing for people to do because they have a fear of judgment. But I think if more people would say actually how they feel, it would connect us more. So I would give that advice, if any, you know, to really label and kind of see and admit to people around you that you are anxious and it's okay to be anxious. Mm-hmm. It is okay to be stressed. It's okay to be all of those emotions. There's a pressure that comes along, you know, the perfect way to cope through COVID times. And there is none. None of us have been through this before. So it's okay to feel all those things and it's okay to say them. And that will prevent other things from happening, like anger and other issues that can come up.
Yeah, it seems like the less that is truly knowable about outcome, the more entrenched sides get, you know, people's rigidity gets, it's, I don't know.
I think to add to that, the being willing to express that I am scared, that applies in a family or in a household, as well as in line at Costco or Home Depot, where people are just, you know, just saying, can you get away from me? You know,
yeah.
Or like looking at each other and saying to somebody else,
can you believe?
Yeah. Yeah. Can you believe her? Or like, excuse me. And if that person could just say, I'm scared. I'm feeling uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Self-compassion. You also bring up self-compassion, Dr. Auckland, in there. Mm-hmm. You know, we are so quick to judge right now.
Yeah.
Are you wearing a mask or are you not wearing a mask?
Right.
You know, how are you behaving during COVID, and are you COVID friendly? Yeah. And there's a lot of judgment, negative judgment, that's causing strain in our community and our community members and our relationships. So yeah. To hold self-compassion towards each other is hugely important.
Yeah. I mean, I live in a community where they're stealing each other's signs and banners. I mean, it's just insane to me. It's just crazy.
You mean their political signs and
banners?
Yeah,
yeah. Whether it's a Biden sign or a Trump sign, you know, they're you know, stealing each other's banners. It's just like, get a grip. Yeah, really crazy. Sarah, did you have a question?
We actually had a caller from Shell Beach that has a question. They're wondering about what kind of exercise is good to ease the stress and during these times. And I'm also assuming during the smoke-filled skies when it's hard to get outside and exercise. What's some good exercise to ease the stress right now?
Good question.
I mean, my feeling is really any exercise. There are some exercises that have been studied, and typically aerobic exercise is thought to be good for anxiety and low mood. There's been a lot of studies on yoga as well. But I would add there that in terms of what we're talking about here, any exercise you can do with others be really, really good right now, whether it be on a Zoom class or walking on the beach, 6 feet apart or with a mask. I would try to do that exercise with someone else. I don't know if you have any other thoughts, Dr. Friedman.
I do. We also don't want to exercise in order to reduce negative feelings and have that hope and expectation, because like I said before, it's okay to feel anxious right now. And when you really kind of take that mindset with you, that it's okay, and giving yourself that space to feel whatever it is that you feel, and then exercise with it, you'll get more benefit out of that exercise. So whenever we're feeling loss or any emotion and we exercise, it's very healthy. And I agree with Dr. Auckland, any type of exercise is helpful, especially exercise with, you know, that promotes social connection. We can also add that, you know, aside from exercise, you could do some mindfulness-based activities, or, you know, even mindfulness itself, just practicing mindfulness, and that's not really considered an exercise, but that is an exercise of some sort that's very healthy for our mental health.
If someone didn't know what mindfulness is, can you describe what a mindfulness exercise might be?
You know, mindfulness is really overwhelming to a lot of people, because I think a lot of people have sort of their own ideas of what mindfulness is. But right now in our society, we have a lot of ways to access mindfulness exercises through apps, all sorts of apps. But really what mindfulness is really kind of touching base with the present moment. So when you're really overwhelmed with a lot of thinking, you might want to just sit in a seated position and take notice of your breath. This could also be done in just a beach walk, noticing the waves coming in and out and noticing your thoughts, but really grounding yourself in the now, in the present moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it helpful in narrowing things down from kind of blocking out all of that external chatter to come back to something that is a little more quieting and a little more grounding.
Yes, it is. It's very helpful to kind of just come back to, even, you know, people do mindfulness when they are just eating a sandwich, you know, eating or experiencing really the little moments, and maybe accessing some gratefulness for just, you know, the moments of the day.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a brief break, and I'm going to hand it back to you, Miss Sarah.
Thanks for tuning in for Central Coast Voices on this Thursday afternoon. Stay tuned. And if you'd like to have your questions or comments answered on the show today, call them into us at 805-549-8855, or you can email them to us at voices@kcbx.org. Listening to Central Coast Voices with host Chris Kington Barker. You're invited to be a part of today's discussions. Give us a call at 805-549-8855 or email them to us at voices@kcbx.org. Back to you, Chris.
Thank you, Sarah. And welcome back to our discussion with Dr. Murat Akalin, psychiatrist, and Dr. Ramona Friedman, clinical psychologist, both with practices here in San Luis Obispo. And Dr. Akalin, you're boarded in both family practice, medicine, and psychiatry. So, you know, with that kind of an approach right now, there's so much talk about whether or not it's more important to address our economy or health as a priority. Do you have any feelings about one way or the other? Or
wow, that's a loaded question.
That's a great question. So, you know, I think as a physician, as a medical physician, focusing on the medical side of things, we want to decrease, you know, death and illness, and that's kind of where all of our thoughts have been oriented towards from the beginning. But I think that the economic impacts cannot be and should not be minimized, because economic health translates directly into mental health and physical health. You know, our economic status is directly correlated to our health status. So I think the debate shouldn't be so much either or. Do we open the economy or do we save lives due to COVID infection? We need to do both. So I think there's a balance to be struck, but I do not think that the argument should be, yeah, do we do one or the other? We have to do both. We have to do both.
And how do you see that we're kind of, you know, and I'm asking you obviously for an opinion here, but how in doing that, are we missing the boat in doing the two of those things concurrently?
Yeah. Well, so I have an opinion on this.
Okay.
I think that we didn't do it all the way the first time, mm-hmm. in terms of taking the the really serious control measures that we needed to do early on. And I think we could have controlled this pandemic. And I think we still could. The problem is we're so far into it, and we've had so much stress and economic hits, and then all of the things that happened to that, that it's really, really hard and probably impossible to take 6 or 8 weeks and really shut things down. But I think what needed to happen is that we were almost there in California, and then we didn't do it all the way. If we had done that, then we could have been just kind of moving along with a much greater degree of openness in the economy and kind of controlling the infection.
You know, we've talked about the impact on mental health for individuals generally that are without already having mental illness that they're struggling with coming into this. Can you talk a little, if one in five individuals in this country has some form of mental illness that they're coping with, can you speak to what you're seeing and how families are coping with individuals that are more even more extraordinarily challenged, and what some of the impact has been with that?
I think generally speaking, people with mental health issues are more at risk for, you know, future mental health issues. You know, we've seen this in a lot of different stressful situations in our world, like 9/11. You know, those who are more prone to anxiety and trauma or have experienced trauma, they have a greater trauma experience post something traumatic. Mm-hmm. So definitely, you know, those who are more sensitive have a bigger reaction. But I can tell you just from my personal experience in my own practice, I actually see a large variety. And my anxious kids and adults kind of feel like the rest of the world is joining them in their experience. They said, well, you know, this is not much different for me. It just kind of feels like everyone is on board now and washing their hands as much as I do already. So,
or as anxious.
Yeah, or as anxious. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something else there too, is people who have had experience with mental health problems of whatever kind and have sought treatment, they actually have learned things about this. They know that these things come and go, that they know that there are things that can be done to grow from them and to help. And so I think many people who have experience with mental health problems and treatment in a lot of ways are in a better position. A lot of them already have resources in place, a physician, a psychologist, a therapist, a group, a notebook that they have from a treatment program that they did that they can turn to, whereas somebody who's kind of been functioning with without a real clinical syndrome of mental health problem is starting fresh, and they haven't been through this before.
That's an interesting concept. Yeah, definitely. Can you talk a little bit about, we've been talking about COVID, but we have some other things that are happening concurrently too. So we're not experiencing a pandemic in isolation. You know, we've got some other societal issues at the same time, and those aren't going away any faster either, if anything. So can you kind of speak to that?
I think that's a huge issue. And in my practice, I'm seeing a lot of people really being affected by the Black Lives Matter movement, their participation in it or their non-participation in it, in a way that is, you know, great and beautiful in terms of social change, but has been really, really stressful on people. And then there's the anxiety about the outcome of the election. In 2016, I saw a lot of new people come to seek mental health treatment in the aftermath of that, or a lot of people who had been ill with mental health problems get much worse. And so this pandemic thing is coming together with those two very real mental health stressors.
And you know, there has been, and I don't know of any recent stats because I didn't look that up. I don't know if you have, but have there been any incidences or any concerns about increases in suicide in any statistics that are leaning in that direction yet?
You know, it's funny that you ask because I actually did look this up and I tried to look it up. So the data is still not out. We really don't know. But my husband, ironically, works for the VA, and the VA tends to keep really good data on the suicide rates. So they predict that they will increase in this kind of, you know, post-COVID time. But it's still just kind of unclear. And they're just kind of predicting that based on just, you know, previous data where there's stressful kind of events in our world. And right after those events, there seems to be an increase.
And there are two factors that are reliably associated with suicide rates. And one is unemployment. And the other is alcoholism and substance use. And both of those are obviously up right now. So,
well, yeah, based on the sales of it.
right.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, there are other interesting ways in which the COVID pandemic has affected substance use disorders. Is people are less able to get treatment. You know, I have a patient who has a substance use disorder and was doing really well in probation. He had some legal problems from this, and the Department of Probation had to stop doing their regular urine drug tests. And he had been doing great and really relied upon the support of that, you know, three times a week meeting with his probation officer. And when she stopped doing the tests, he did okay for a few weeks and then he relapsed.
Can you talk about, you know, we haven't really talked about, there's another aspect of COVID too that I can't help but relate to, and that is the issue of death. The issue of fear about dying or death, that it's either going to happen to us or to someone that we love. Do you hear that in your practice as something that comes up for people, or is it not really spoken about? Is it, you know, because I'm more aware of it, that that it seems like it would be more top of mind for people?
You know, since I see a lot of young people have a kind of a hard time thinking about death. But there are a lot of adults that do fear death and think about their death. It's such an uncomfortable topic for everyone to think about. So I think even the lack of thinking about it and the lack of talking about it sort of increases people's discomfort of that possibility. I don't know, Dr. Eklund, do you have any experience with talking about this one?
You know, I think that maybe first a general comment. You know, the coronavirus, despite what some people might say, is around. It's a new disease. It's a new disease that we have in our global population now. And it is now a new way that people die. It's a new infection that people die from. And this is going to be the way that people die for as long as it's around. And we do eradicate some infectious diseases, but maybe that'll happen someday with COVID. But so I think that there's going to be some acceptance around this, that this is just another way that people die. And so it does bring up the question of, we do die. Whether we die of COVID or something else, we're going to die. We're just going to try to stay healthy so we don't die prematurely if we don't need to. You know, but I think fear of death is just such a fundamental thing, and yet it causes so much suffering to fear the inevitable. I have to tell a funny story of early on in the pandemic, my mother had a she was feeling lightheaded. I think she had some acid reflux or something. She was feeling uncomfortable, and she got sweaty and felt dizzy and lightheaded, and she had to go lie down. And then I went in and checked on her, and I said, "How are you doing?" She's like, "I'm better now." She's like, I said, "Were you afraid?" And she's like, "I thought I was a goner." So I think we're not this period of COVID, I think she would not have thought she was a goner just because she was feeling a little bit.
Yeah. Or people who are getting a natural influenza, one that's been around for a while, and the symptoms are very similar to what they hear a coronavirus might be, like COVID, and, you know, kind of really panicking because they could have COVID-19. The other thing that's coming up for people, too, that I hear from individuals is the fact that they can't be with loved ones in the same way that they could when loved ones have fallen ill, have actually become ill, get hospitalized, even if they go into an emergency room. You know, so not being able to be with someone, this is so for pets as well in some situations. I think that's gotten a little more open, but, you know, the first time that I had to release my dog to go in with the vet and not be able to go in with her, it was kind of an eye opener for me. So how are you seeing that? And what kind of impact are you seeing that have on people? Because that's going to be around probably for a while as well.
That's a really, really tough one, Chris. I think, you know, in terms of controlling the spread of the infection and keeping people's access to each other limited when they're in the hospital or in a nursing facility or dying. Mm-hmm. That's just a really tough one because it's just tough. I think that's a hard thing to be alone when we're like that. And I even think about, actions that need to be taken around hospice care and end of life care.
Yeah.
Where there are, you know, we're having to limit exposure and limit group gatherings of people.
Yeah, long-term care facilities, because people are so vulnerable, you know, not being able to be with an individual if they do test positive for COVID. It's, you know, very, very difficult for people, I know.
Yes, and people are trying. I see a lot of beautiful stories and, you know, using that creativity of, you know, Zoom or FaceTime or whatever we can do to connect with our loved ones. It's never going to be the same as actually being there and holding their hand. But it's just a really hard time in that category. I agree.
Yeah. What are some, you know, we have about probably about 7 minutes left. So I want to make sure that we get in the questions and, you know, you get across what's important for you to get across. So I'm going to start with you, Dr. Friedman. What do you want, especially for children and for adolescents, what kind of messages do you really want parents to have during this time?
Oh, gosh, you know, I talk about screen time every day. I think a lot of parents out there have a lot of concerns about how much their kids and teenagers are on screens.
Yeah.
They're isolating themselves and using a lot of social media, and all these things in excess are not so great for us. But I think the worry of how much my child is on screens sometimes can also be, you know, very anxiety producing and life interfering for a parent. So I think right now it's just really important to just give a lot of grace, you know, just not worry so much about the exact time that your child is on the screen or how much you're on a screen. We want to limit those and have a nice balance. But, you know, it's important just to take it one moment at a time with distance learning and being with each other and having dinner together and really putting the focus on, family togetherness or thinking of new ways to hang out together as a family and new games or new activities that you can create rather than the limiting of screen time or trying to control or trying to, go through all of those kind of things.
What are some things that you've had people share that you think are creative, flexible things that families have done to engage kids with adults that you can speak to that might give parents an idea or parent an idea? Because we have a lot of single parents that are really trying to juggle being a parent, being, may still be working from home and juggle all this.
Gosh, I've heard so many, and I can tell you, to be totally honest, that I'm more inspired by my patients. They give me personal ideas to apply to my own family, but really, people have done so many wonderful things, from helping their community members and, again, baking bread for their neighbors, mm-hmm. And doing a lot of sort of giving back to their communities, to camping in their backyards, getting the camping gear and, building a little fire and doing a fun game outside. I hear a lot of nature. Families have sort of turned towards nature and have gone camping or, more hikes or more outdoor time, which mm-hmm. has been wonderful to see. It's almost like we've sort of started to enjoy what my parents used to enjoy, kind of biking outside with our neighbors because it's naturally socially distanced. So those are just some things that I'm seeing.
And I think that that creativity, we have to keep that alive, because one thing that can happen, we've also never been in a situation, I think, where we're so constantly scanning our environment for risk and trying to modulate risk. How risky is this interaction? How risky is that? How risky is to touch this or to move there or to be in this place or to be with this person? And what have they done? And you can get exhausted and then give up. And I think a lot of people are giving up. And that's what we see when somebody says, you hear that, I don't care. I would rather get it and be done with it. And somehow that's a hope.
Or you see a lot of like, it just doesn't matter anymore. Or there is no COVID.
Yes, we can go that far.
Maybe the give up is the big group gatherings where people go, just friggy dig it. I'm just going for it. If I'm going to get it, I'm going to get it,
Right. Yeah. On the other end of it, I give up completely. I'm not going to go out at all. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think this creativity is really important, and to find ways that we can do this. And, I have some very dear neighbors here who had a dinner gathering outdoors, and rather than seat at a long table, they arranged three tables and an additional card table. And so all the couples were well over 6 feet apart. There were three couples, and we were like 10 feet apart.
Yeah.
And it was perfect. And we took turns serving ourselves. And there's lots of, we just can't give up. We just can't give up.
Yeah.
I want to direct people also to a really cool article I saw, I think, in the New York Times by an engineer named Lindsay Marr, who's doing a lot of research on the air movement of particles. And she published some thoughts on how to hug in a way that mm-hmm. is good during this time. And how to, if you're going to embrace a family member or a close friend, turn your heads to the side, not the same way. If you're an adult and you're going to embrace a child, let them hug you around the legs or the waist, not to the head. We need to hug, and don't hug forever.
Don't make it a hug.
And then step back. There are ways we can do these things that are better. And I think this middle path between total isolation, and total giving up.
Yeah. And you mentioned too, that the coronavirus is probably going to be around for a while. I mean, it really is not going to, regardless of when any kind of vaccine comes out, that it's not going to immediately dissipate whatever's mm-hmm. going to happen. I mean, it's we're still used to be in, you know, I'm in Rotary and we're still working on polio, right?
Right. And
so in other countries, so it's going to be a while. But you can do things that are middle of the way and have that be effective. One of the questions that I've heard from parents that are trying to deal with kids, and if you've got a great quick answer on it too, is how do they motivate their kids to do schoolwork?
Yeah, I don't have a quick answer for that. I did a little kind of webinar podcast on that topic that lasted for, you know, a couple of hours alone. So, you know, I would say there is no quick answer. It's okay to be unmotivated, and it's actually okay to not do your best work. So instead of, you know, trying to be motivated, there are a lot of sort of motivational techniques that we can kind of do, you know, trying to find the meaning in our work, or kind of extrinsic kind of motivation, little techniques. Like if we finish this, then we get to watch a movie, you know, those kind of things. But big take home is it's okay. It's okay. I would actually bring some humor into the lack of motivation.
Yeah.
And I think that's a general point. It's okay to not feel so good during this time. The question is, what do we actually do while we're not feeling good? Do we continue to live our lives in a way that makes sense and is meaningful and keeps up with our values?
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. Excuse me. I've got a cough going.
Uh-oh. Fear, anxiety, uncertainty.
I know, right? On the air. Just 2 minutes, but final comments?
I just made my final comments.
Did you just make Dr. Friedman?
Oh gosh, you know, we talked about some things that we can do. We can't control anything, but we can move towards things that are important to us, like connection. This gave us a really good opportunity to maybe shed some not so healthy connections. But, you know, yeah. Really kind of think about what, you know, who's important in your life and try to make that effort in connecting.
And maybe try and call somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Friends yeah. work without a video.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They still do.
Yeah, I want to thank my guests for today's show, Dr. Murat Aklan, psychiatrist here in San Luis Obispo County, and Dr. Ramona Friedman, clinical psychologist here in San Luis Obispo. Next week, join Fred Monroe as he speaks about fire safety. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and San Luis Obispo Community Foundation, in collaboration with KCBX, made possible by Joan Geller-Sargent. I'm Chris Kington. Thank you for joining us today.